It's a one who uses others for her own gain and their great misfortune. His upper lip curled back from his straight white teeth as he studied Amara. Amara's mind flashed to a time not so long ago, when Felix had desired her. Judging by the look in his eye, none of those feelings remained. And the moment the game is up, and she has nowhere to limp off to, she suddenly wants to be a hero? How convenient.
I'm no hero, Amara said, refusing to show him any more fear.
She was through with fear and doubt. She had only certainty within her now. Certainty that the baby would be returned to Lucia and that Micah would not die today. It surprised her how fiercely she clung to the need for Micah's life to continue. He was a rebel, one who would kill her in an instant if he got the opportunity, just like Felix. But what he'd said in the forgetting room, about her grandmother, about Amara's deluded idea of achieving a peaceful and benevolent world by force and absolute rule, he'd been completely right. A man had been right in telling Amara she was wrong. It was a deeply annoying realization, but that didn't make it any less true.
I know what I've done, Amara said. I'm not seeking redemption for it. I know that's impossible. But you're here, and you're capable of helping me with these tasks.
Tasks? You make it sound so simple. Narissa shook her head as she moved through Amara's expansive chambers, brushing her hand along the back of a green velvet chaise.
You're suggesting we mount an immediate rescue of two heavily guarded prisoners, but we're only two people. It was difficult enough getting to this wing of the palace.
Not that difficult, Felix growled.
You will have my full cooperation.
Yet even Amara had to agree that what she proposed would not be simple.
Still, this is my ascension day, so yes, it will be tricky. Security is doubled throughout the spire.
Ah, yes, excellent plan, Felix said. You sending us off for slaughter so we're out of the way of your shiny ceremony. He would not listen to her, no matter what she said. She knew that, but she couldn't let it stop her.
Narissa, Amara began, you have to believe me that I want to help.
I do believe you, Narissa replied. And I agree that ensuring the safety of Lyssa needs to be a priority. She must be returned to her mother immediately.
Good. So where do you suggest we start?
Amara eased herself down upon the chaise to take the pressure off her leg. The sun streamed in through the windows along the opposite side of the room. Through the windows, she could see the crystal blue waters of the Silver Sea.
Let's say I go along with this, Felix said, pacing the gilded ceramic floor of Amara's chambers like a caged beast. I go and scour the city, checking Micah's old hideout for rebels that are still breathing, and I enlist them to join us in his rescue. After that, we wrestle the baby away from the clutches of evil Granny. And what then? What happens to you?
Then?
Amara carefully considered this.
I will still rule as Empress.
Felix groaned.
Isn't that convenient?
Amara's heartbeat quickened.
I can. I've seen the error of my ways. That my grandmother has been far too instrumental in the darkest of my decisions. I don't place the blame fully on her, of course. I chose to do what I did. Just as my father would have selectively listened to his advisors.
She winced at the thought that she'd turned out to be exactly like the man she'd hated all her life.
But I can change. I can be better. And now that I've discovered that my grandmother has been manipulating me for her own gain, she will no longer be such a strong influence on me.
Felix raised his one visible eyebrow.
You honestly believe every piece of that soggy horse dung coming out of your mouth, don't you?
He spoke with such disrespect that she got the overwhelming urge to scream so that her guards would arrive and have him arrested. Then Amara reminded herself yet again how much Felix had endured because of her. Most men wouldn't still be standing, let alone breathing. He was strong, and she needed that strength today of all days.
It's not horse dung,
she said firmly. It's the truth. Felix looked at Nerissa, shaking his head.
I can't listen to this for much longer.
Amara realized Nerissa's attention hadn't shifted from her for a moment. Her former attendant studied her carefully, her dark eyes narrowed, her slim arms crossed over her chest.
There's no time for debate, Nerissa finally said. Felix and I will go search for local rebels, and I pray that we find enough who are willing to help.
Felix finally sheathed his blade, but his expression hadn't softened even a fraction.
If we find them, I know they'll help. Micah was a great leader,
he frowned.
Is a great leader. Nothing has changed there.
I'll go with you, Amara said, wanting to assist in any way she could.
No,
Nerissa replied.
You will stay here and get ready for your ascension. Act as if everything is normal.
Frustration coursed through Amara, and she awkwardly pushed herself up from the soft chaise and back up to her feet.
But everything is not normal. Far from it. All the more reason for you to pretend that it is. We do not want to raise the suspicions of your grandmother more than they already are. If that happens, she won't let anyone within sight of either Micah or Lissa. And Micah will die, executed in a dark room with no one to help him.
Amara wanted to argue more, but she saw the wisdom in Nerissa's words. Finally, she nodded.
Very well. Please return as soon as you possibly can. We will.
Nerissa moved toward the door without further hesitation. Felix backed away from Amara slowly, as if he expected her to plunge a dagger into his back the moment he turned away.
If you're lying yet again, he said before he left the room, you will regret it very, very much. You hear me?
And then they were gone, and Amara was alone, wondering if she'd made the correct decision. Then again, any other decision would have resulted in her bleeding on the floor right now, gasping for her last breath. This had been the right thing to do. Still, it felt as unnatural and awkward as trying to walk on a broken leg. Amara tried her best to go about the rest of her day as originally planned. She meditated, bathed, and then took a midday meal of fruit and light pastries, which she barely touched. She had a final fitting for a new leg brace that would allow her to walk from now on unassisted by a cane. It was better, but she still couldn't hide her limp. Then she waited as long as she could before allowing an attendant to paint her face, lining her eyes heavily in black kohl, brushing her lips with a dye that would make them appear as red as rubies. Another attendant styled her long black hair, creating an intricate maze of braids. Finally, they helped Amara into her ascension gown with Lorenzo supervising, pride for his magnificent piece of artistry shining in his eyes.
You are as beautiful as a goddess today, Your Majesty, he said, as the heavy wings were placed onto her shoulders.
Amara looked into the mirror at her heavily made-up eyes, the color of her irises the exact same pale gray-blue as Asher's were. She'd wanted what Lorenzo said for so long. To be a goddess. To have ultimate power at any cost at all. And part of her still wanted that. Still wanted that shiny, exquisite bauble that now lay just out of her reach.
I can have both, she silently told her golden reflection. I can have power and make the right decisions. Today is the first day of my new life.
After she left Lorenzo, she shrugged off any cloying guard who wanted to escort her to the ceremony hall.
I know the way, she told them, and I wish only for silence and solitude to help collect my thoughts.
They didn't question her. The guards bowed, let her pass, and didn't follow.
Of course they obey me, she thought.
They knew they would be harshly punished if they didn't. Fear was a powerful weapon, forged over time and by example. Generations of fear for the punishments issued by the Cortis family line had created total and complete obedience. Could people be ruled without fear to keep them in check? Was it even possible? She didn't know for certain, and that question troubled her deeply. Amara took the long way to the hall where, by now, every creation who had received a personal invitation to the event of the century would be lining the large, ornate room where her father and mother had been married, where her three brothers, but not their lesser sister, had been officially presented to important friends of the Emperor after their births, where her mother had been displayed after her death, fully painted and coiffed and wearing her wedding gown for all to see. 1,000 would fill the hall as Amara received the scepter, a symbol of power for a Kreatian ruler since the very beginning, that bore the chiseled golden head of a phoenix, a symbol of eternal life and eternal power. Within the scepter, there was a sharp blade, and with this blade, the ascending ruler would make a blood sacrifice to bring good fortune to her reign. Today it would be Micah's blood, unless Felix and Nerissa were successful in their quest. Amara took her time walking to the ceremony hall. She wove through the palace and past the large windows that looked out onto her courtyard. She paused. She knew exactly what would calm her. Amara made her way out into her rock garden. To her surprise, waiting for her on a table, was a bottle of wine with two goblets, just as there had been when she'd arrived. There was a message there which read,
"Dasha, I anticipate that you will visit your favorite place before joining me and the others. Please take a moment to appreciate how much you have accomplished and how very much I appreciate you. You are my Dasha."
Yes. A sip of sweet wine might be exactly what she needed to calm her nerves to face what was to come. Her grandmother knew her very well indeed. She poured some of the golden liquid into one of the goblets and then raised it to her lips.
"Empress!"
She jumped at the sound of the voice. Costas approached her, his expression grim.
"Did the queen send you to fetch me?"
she said as sharply as she could.
"Or did you decide to interrupt my privacy all on your own?"
"Queen Nila sent me to find you. The ceremony is ready to begin."
"I'm sure it is. And I'm equally sure that it can't start without me."
He took a step closer. He looked pained.
"I know you're angry with me for all that's transpired."
"Angry?" she said, cocking her head. "What reason would I have for being angry with you, Costas?
For shamelessly spying on me for my grandmother for months now?
For kidnapping a child from a sorceress who could kill us all with a flick of her wrist?"
"Yes, that, all of that. But I need you to know."
The guard glanced over his shoulder, as if assuring himself that they were alone.
"I didn't do this with disrespect intended toward you, Empress. I know I had earned your trust, and I valued that."
"And yet you destroyed that trust in an instant," Amara said. "Which was a grave mistake, I can assure you."
His eyes searched hers.
"I need to explain why I did it."
"Lower your eyes to the ground," she said curtly. "You are no longer allowed to look at me as anything but a servant."
He did as commanded.
"Queen Nila threatened my family. Said she would have them killed if I didn't do as she said. She said that by doing as she instructed, I would be helping you, not hurting you. I felt I had no choice."
Amara wasn't sure why this explanation felt like a shock to her. Of course, it made total sense.
"The royal guard are not permitted to have a family for this reason, so that they can't be used against you."
"I know. I thought I could hide the existence of my wife and son, but I couldn't. I broke the rules. That much I know and accept. But it tells you that I was without a choice. I had to do what Queen Nila commanded.
You should have come to me with this earlier. Much earlier."
"I know.
I can only beg for your forgiveness, and assure you that I would die to protect your Empress. My life is yours."
It explained everything. It didn't excuse what he did, but she understood now why he'd done it. It wasn't because he'd shifted his loyalties to her grandmother. He'd acted out of fear.
"We'll have to move your family somewhere more secure," Amara said. "Somewhere my grandmother won't be able to find them."
Costas let out a breath, and Amara saw his shoulders relax a bit.
Much gratitude, Empress.
Amara picked up the wine bottle and poured the other glass.
Have a drink with me. Quickly, before we need to go to the ceremony.
Costas looked down with surprise at the goblet she handed to him.
Me, Your Grace?
She nodded.
Make a toast, will you? Something that will give me the strength to continue on with this challenging day.
Of course.
He raised the goblet, his brow furrowed in thought.
To the reign of Amara Cortis, the first empress in history. May that reign be one of light and hope and happiness for all who fall within her view.
He drank deeply from his goblet. Amara paused to consider his words.
Could she really do this?
Could she be the first empress in the world? Someone who would rule with a message of hope instead of fear? She had to try. If she was successful, she could truly be the legendary phoenix brought to life. Amara raised the goblet to her lips, just as Costas collapsed to his knees. His face had turned red and purple, with blotches of sickly white. Blood spilled over his bottom lip.
Costas!
She cried, dropping her goblet.
What's happening to you?
He couldn't speak. He clutched at his throat and toppled over on his side, his eyes wide and glassy. Amara staggered back from the body, from the bottle of wine that had fallen to the mossy ground of the courtyard, its golden contents leaking out. In the space of a few heartbeats, a horrible clarity dawned on her.
The wine had been poisoned.
Poison like the kind Neela had supplied Amara to put in the wine she'd given her father and brothers. And now Costas was dead. But Amara knew he wasn't the intended victim. She left Costas there, sidestepping his body so she wouldn't get blood on the golden skirt of her gown. She summoned every piece of control she had over herself to keep any tears from spilling. She wouldn't want to mess up the coal around her eyes, the stain on her lips, her perfect hair and perfect wings and perfect day. She thought her father might be proud of how she managed to pull herself together, and ahead to the tall, emerald-colored doors of the ceremony hall, where a flank of guards waited to escort her inside. She let them. Amara entered the hall, and a thousand people she'd kept waiting rose from the gleaming wooden benches to their feet. She moved down the aisle toward the front, where there were 10 steps leading to a raised stage. On that stage were 3 people. The Grand Augur, wearing magnificent purple velvet robes. Her grandmother, wearing a gown of silver finery nearly as beautiful as Amara's. And Micah, on his knees, his hands bound behind his back. She forced herself not to hesitate, to take each step as proudly as she'd be expected to by all witnesses. Finally, she stood next to the woman who had just tried to murder her and take her power. After Amara, Neela was the next in line for the title of Empress.
Beautiful,
Neela cooed. If Amara had expected to see surprise at her arrival from her grandmother, there was no hint of it at all.
Even more beautiful than I expected. We should keep Lorenzo and Crescia forever, don't you think?
Amara pushed a smile onto her lips.
Oh, yes. Most definitely.
How could she untangle herself from this deceptive, lying creature of darkness and make everything right again?
Not now, she thought. Later. I'll think about this later.
Now, all she could do was hope that Nerissa and Felix had done what they'd promised. She barely heard a word the Grand Augur spoke during the ascension ceremony she'd dreamed about all her life. Something about history and family honor and the duties of a ruler. All she knew was that it was over far too quickly. Now, Neela held the golden scepter, facing Amara on the stage.
You're worthy to wield this, Dosha,
Neela said, her smile fixed upon a face far younger looking than should have been possible. Amara wondered if her mysterious apothecary was responsible for poisons as well as youth-inducing elixirs. Amara watched her grandmother carefully, looking for any sign of guilt, but she found none. Had Neela expected Amara to show up at all? It could only have been a best guess that Amara would go back to her courtyard and find the wine. How many other traps had been set for her by someone she'd loved and trusted?
No!
The Grand Augur said, opening his arms wide as he addressed the silent, obedient audience.
The last piece of this ascension must now lock into place. A blood sacrifice. A rebel who attempted to overthrow the royal family, who colluded in the murder of the former emperor and princes. Today, his blood shall spill to wash away the past and welcome the future of Empress Amara Cortas.
Amara moved toward Micah, mindlessly separating the scepter she held into its two parts, sheath and blade. Micah didn't flinch, didn't try to escape.
Do what you must, he told her with a sneer. Prove to me you're as evil as your father was.
Despite the show of bravery, he inhaled sharply as she pressed the edge of the blade to his throat. One simple thrust of her wrist, and she would officially be Empress, and no one could oppose or control her. It was so tempting. Then, she could send her grandmother far away, where she would never be heard from again. Amara could have all the power she ever desired, and do with that power everything she ever dreamed. But before she could decide what path she would now take, the hall erupted in chaos. A group of masked armed figures swarmed inside, battling against the guards in a blur of arms and legs and weapons. The clash of blades quickly became deafening. Heart pounding, Amara turned back toward Micah, just in time for him to kick her hard in her broken leg. The pain shot up her spine. She dropped her weapon as she fell to the floor. Then he was gone, out of her sight. She searched for her grandmother, but couldn't spot her either. Amara turned around to find a sword pointed at her face, and the dark and hateful glare of a rebel's eyes. The man took a step forward, moving the blade to her throat, but just as he did, he was shoved aside. The sword clattered to the ground as the rebel fell. Felix stood before her, offering his hand.
I should have let him kill you, but I'd rather keep that honor for myself one day.
Not today, she asked tensely. He frowned at her.
Unfortunately, no.
Nerissa came to Felix's side as the battle between rebels and guards continued behind them. Guests fled for the exit in a frenzied, frightened stampede.
We did our part,
Nerissa told her as she elbowed her way through the crowd.
This would be an excellent distraction for us to get to Lyssa.
Amara nodded. With no time to speak or make suggestions or do anything except try to avoid being struck down by a rebel's blade, she led Nerissa and Felix out of the ceremony hall, to the nursery her grandmother had taken her to earlier that day. Each step on her newly injured leg hurt. She hoped very much the brace would continue to hold as she hobbled along as fast as she could down hallway after hallway, passing swarms of guards headed in the opposite direction. Of course, Amara was recognizable in the spear even without her golden gown. She knew she couldn't hide from these guards as she hurried down the hallways toward her destination, so she didn't try.
We will control the situation, Empress, one guard told her. You do not have to fear.
A lovely promise, she thought, but not possible at this point.
She feared. She feared very much the outcome of this day. After awkwardly ascending the stairway to the floor of the nursery, Amara led her personal pair of rebels down the last hallway to the unguarded door at the end.
Lyssa is in there.
She gestured toward the door while scanning the area.
The guards on duty must have been called away to join the fight, but the door would be locked.
That's not a problem, Felix said.
He kicked the door hard and it flew open. Amara entered the room first, expecting to deal with nothing more than a frightened nursemaid. But, of course, things couldn't be that simple. Neela was already in the room, alone, holding the baby in her arms.
So nice of you to join us,
Neela said, barely glancing up after the door broke open. Amara felt her heart sink in her chest. She tried to speak, but no words came. Nerissa stepped forward.
Put her down right now, she demanded.
Neela smiled at her.
I don't know you, do I?
No. But I know you. And you're going to put that baby back in a cradle and leave this room right now.
No. Actually, I don't think I will.
Felix stepped closer.
You know, I really don't make it a habit to mess with old ladies if I can help it. But some old ladies need messing with.
He flashed his blade at her.
Step away from the baby and no one has to get hurt.
Neela swept her gaze over him.
I recognize you, don't I? Felix Gabras, one of Gaius de Moira's bodyguards. The one that my granddaughter took to her bed at her first opportunity. And the one who is arrested for poisoning the Emperor and my grandsons. How surprising it is to see you again.
Felix's eye narrowed on her.
And you're the evil granny who's responsible for everyone's pain and misery around here. Every kingdom's got one, it seems.
Neela's smile held.
I advise you to stay exactly where you are, Felix. We wouldn't want this darling child to get hurt, would we?
Lyssa cooed and stretched her little arms over her head. Amara eyed her uneasily.
We need to give the baby back to Lucia de Mora Madosha, she said aloud. Felix and Nerissa will take her from here.
Neela made no move to put the baby down.
Dosha, are you being forced to comply with these rebels' demands? Be honest with me. There'll be consequences for lying, as I'm sure you know.
Amara's mouth went dry.
Why did you poison the wine, Madosha?
Neela raised a brow.
What did you say?
The wine you left for me in my courtyard rock garden. You left me poisoned wine, because you hoped I'd drink a glass before the ceremony.
What? I admit I left you some wine, but it wasn't poisoned. If it was, someone else is certainly to blame. You are my jewel, Dosha. My treasure beyond any other from the moment you were born.
Amara searched her face, now uncertain. Could this be the truth? That someone else had found the wine and poisoned it?
I know you called my mother that. Your jewel. And I know she died for me, because of the potion. Perhaps you blame me for that.
No. I don't blame you.
Neela's eyes narrowed.
Your mother died because your father was evil and cruel and heartless. And now he's dead, and I can dance upon his grave, and the graves of all men like him in this world. Now, I ask you again. Are these rebels forcing your hand?
Amara looked down at the peaceful face of Lyssa, nestled in Neela's arms. Surely, her grandmother had held her like this, had cared for her when she was only a baby whose mother had been taken before her time. And then the clouds parted outside. A ray of sun shone through a window at the far end of the room. Amara noticed something glinting in Neela's grip, partially hidden beneath the blanket and pressed against the baby's stomach. A knife. Amara took a shallow breath in.
Yes, she forced the word out. They are. They rescued Micah and told me that if I didn't bring them here, they would kill me.
I knew it! Felix growled.
I will kill you before you leave this room, you deceitful bitch!
No, you won't,
Neela said, revealing the blade for them to see as well.
Please don't!
Nerissa held out her hands and shook her head.
Don't hurt the child!
If I do, it will only be because you gave me no other choice. It will be your fault entirely.
Neela shook her head.
And such a waste to spill even a drop of this baby's precious blood. So here is how this will work. The two of you will leave here immediately and rejoin your friends downstairs, who no doubt have been captured by now, as they were the last time they attempted a siege upon the spear. Then you will all be executed. The more blood spilled at my granddaughter's ascension, the better and more memorable it will be.
Amara hadn't moved, had barely breathed, as she'd listened to her grandmother calmly explain all this.
"And you?"
Neela addressed Amara now.
"I must say your actions today worry me."
Amara shook her head.
"They shouldn't. I am still with you in all ways, Madosha. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have everything I have today."
She needed to play along, needed to convince her grandmother she was trustworthy. And a horrible part of her, a scared and dark part she wasn't proud of, wanted to erase her deal with Felix and Nerissa, to have everything go back to the way it was before, when the world was hers to do with as she pleased now that she had enough power to wield.
"I have been your greatest advisor," Neela said. "I know you struggled with some decisions you've had to make, such as with Asher. But you did choose to kill him, just as you killed your father and two other brothers. You did that, not me."
"I know," Amara whispered. Neela took a step forward. With Lyssa cradled in one arm, she reached her other hand out and stroked Amara's cheek.
"You need me, Dosha. I've given you everything you've ever desired, and yet now you look at me with such doubt that it breaks my heart. But it can still be all right."
"Don't listen to her," Nerissa hissed. "She fills your head with lies." Amara tried to ignore her, tried to focus only on her grandmother's face.
"It can," she whispered.
"Yes. However, sadly, today it seems that you lost your mind, Dosha."
Amara shook her head.
"I haven't lost my mind."
"But you have,"
Neela insisted.
"I have seen this madness coming upon you ever since you lost your beloved father and brothers. I've documented it, but I had hoped it wouldn't escalate to this."
"What are you talking about?" Amara's heart began to beat fast and hard. "I'm not mad."
"I found a place for you, somewhere safe, where you can recover your mind. It will be peaceful, so very peaceful, and I promise to visit you regularly. There are others like you there, others afflicted by this confusion that has caused you to hurt so many people. I know you love, including me. I hope that the actions I've taken will help you heal, my beloved Dosha. And during your absence, for as long as it takes, I will rule in your place."
Amara stared at her grandmother as the rest of her world began crashing down all around her.
"You planned this all along," she said,
the words like jagged rocks in her throat. Those of a lower class, if they lost their minds, were allowed to leave this life gently, with the hope that they would be cured for their next life. But those of the royal class were given the opportunity to heal during this life. Locked away in a forgetting room, but one in a madhouse, where its prisoners were told it was for their own good, not because of a specific crime they'd committed. But Amara knew the experience was the same in all other ways. Forgotten for years, decades, sometimes until their natural death. Neela sent a glare toward Felix and Nerissa, who were still watching silently.
"Put down your weapons and walk away, or I fear my granddaughter will hurt this child and I can't do a thing about it."
She moved the tip of the blade upward to Lyssa's small, vulnerable throat. Nerissa and Felix finally did as instructed, their expressions dark and pained. They moved backward until they were on the other side of the open door.
"I've won," Neela said. "Admit it, and all of this will go smoothly, Dosha. I promise it doesn't have to hurt."
Amara tasted the bitter tang of the red dye as she licked her lips, trying to find the strength to reply, to say what she knew she had to say. Her grandmother controlled her life. She always had. Amara just hadn't realized it until now.
"You've won,"
Amara whispered.
"Now please. Please, put the baby back in her cradle."
"Very well,"
Neela smiled and gently placed Lyssa down.
"Now I want you to thank me for the beautiful gift I've given you."
Amara smoothed the sides of her golden skirts.
Thank you for the beautiful gift you've given me. A gift that is valuable and precious. Yes. Yes, it is. Not it, my darling. She. And we still need to pick a new name for her.
Oh. Amara frowned.
I didn't mean that gift.
Neela cocked her head.
Then what gift did you mean? This gift.
Amara drew her wedding dagger out from beneath the folds of her skirt and pulled her grandmother into an embrace.
Thank you, Madosha. Thank you so much.
Then she sank the tip of the blade into her grandmother's chest. The old woman gasped, stiffened, but Amara held on.
You poisoned the wine,
Amara whispered in her ear.
I know you did. But even if you didn't, this still had to happen.
She yanked the blade out. The front of her golden gown was now stained with her grandmother's blood. Neela stood there for a moment, her hand pressed to her chest, her eyes wide with disbelief.
I did everything for you,
she managed.
I suppose I'm just an ungrateful grandchild,
Amara replied as Neela fell to her knees.
Always thinking of herself and no one else. This isn't over,
Neela gasped, but her words grew weak as her blood flowed over the floor.
The potion. The resurrection potion. I've taken it. I will live again.
That the potion requires one who loves you more than any other to sacrifice their life in exchange for yours. Amara raised her chin.
That might have been me before today, but no longer.
Neela dropped to her side, and the life faded from her gray eyes. Amara then turned to Felix and Nerissa, standing in the doorframe, staring at her as if she'd just performed the most incredible feat of magic they'd ever witnessed.
I really hate to admit it, but I think I'm impressed,
Felix said, shaking his head. Nerissa had no such reaction as she moved quickly to the cradle and picked up Lyssa.
Take her and go,
Amara said, surprised that she sounded so calm. The dagger she held continued to drip her grandmother's blood to the floor.
I have some things to clean up here.
Nerissa shook her head, then opened her mouth to say something in reply. Amara held up her hand to stop her.
Please, don't say another word, just go. Take Lyssa back to Lucia and tell her I'm sorry. And if you see my brother, tell him I know he hates me and always will, but that I hope one day to make amends, even though I have no idea how I'll do that. Now just go before we waste any more time.
Nerissa's eyes had turned glassy. She swallowed hard and nodded.
Farewell,
she said. And then she and Felix disappeared with the baby. And Amara, alone in the room with the body of her grandmother, waited to see who would arrive first. A rebel to kill her, or a guard to arrest her. She knew she'd more than earned either outcome. Chapter 30 Cleo Aranos. Cleo knew Magnus would follow, just as he had when she'd gone to the festival. And if he found her before she reached the palace, she knew he would try to stop her. And the city would burn. She couldn't let that happen. Cleo held tightly onto Enzo as he raced his horse across the green hills and valleys of the Iranian countryside until her beautiful city finally came into view. She gasped at the sight before her. The city of gold had greatly changed since yesterday. Frightening, thick green vines now covered the golden walls, reminding her of the blue lines on her skin. The vines looked as if they had been there for years, growing from a deserted and untended garden. But they hadn't been there before, not at all. The walls had always been clear of any debris. This was new.
Earth magic, she managed to say aloud.
Enzo nodded grimly.
Olivia has been changing the city to please herself. The kindred have taken over completely in such a short time. I'm afraid so, he said.
They control everything within the walls. Citizens who aren't now imprisoned in pits Olivia created, or cages of fire, are hiding in their homes and businesses afraid to come outside.
Kyan wanted everyone to know of their existence, Cleo thought, and to fear their power. The main gates themselves were coated in flames. Cleo could feel the painful, intense heat even 30 paces away, as if she'd stepped close to the face of the sun itself. Enzo's horse wouldn't take another step toward it, bucking in protest, until they finally had to dismount it. There were no sentries stationed above the fiery gate or to the sides of it.
"How do we get inside?" she asked.
Just as she spoke the words, the gates opened all on their own, allowing entry into the city. As the flames parted, Cleo saw someone waiting for them. Lucia's long raven-black hair blew away from her face.
"Don't worry," she called out to them. "I won't let the fire burn you."
"Lucia," Cleo said, stunned.
"Welcome,"
Lucia said, spreading her arms. She wore a plain black cloak that bore no embroidery or adornments at all.
"It's nice of you to finally show up. I've been waiting here for a while."
She sounded so calm and collected, as if this weren't a nightmare come to life.
"You're helping him,"
Cleo said, the words painful in her throat.
"He has, Alyssa,"
Lucia replied simply.
"He won't show her to me. Won't confirm that she's fine, but he has her. And therefore he has me as well. It's as simple as that."
Cleo wrung her hands as she walked through the entrance and into the city. Enzo stayed at her side. True to Lucia's promise, they didn't feel the heat of the flames anymore, even though the opened gate still burned. Cleo hadn't seen Lyssa at the temple. Perhaps she should have demanded that Kyan show her the baby to ensure her safety. Instead, she'd been too focused on her own well-being. She could have prevented all this.
"You,"
Lucia addressed Enzo.
"You've done what Kyan asked of you. Now leave us to speak in private."
"I won't go," Enzo said gruffly. "I will protect the princess from anyone who means her harm."
"That certainly must be a long list by now. I'll say it again. Go away."
Lucia flicked her hand, and Enzo staggered back toward the flames.
"Stop it," Cleo snapped. "Don't hurt him."
Lucia raised a brow.
"If he does what I say, he won't come to further harm."
"Princess,"
Enzo said, his voice pained. Cleo's heart pounded.
"Go. Do as she says. I'll be fine."
They both knew it was a lie. But Enzo nodded, turned, and walked directly toward the palace along the main pathway to the entrance.
"Come with me," Lucia said. "We'll take the long way."
"Why?"
Cleo asked.
"Doesn't Kyan want to know I'm here? Just follow me."
Lucia turned away from Cleo and strode in the opposite direction from Enzo. Cleo forced herself to move. She had to be brave.
"Finally," the water kindred said from within her. "This long and tiresome journey is almost at an end."
"Not if I have any say in the matter,"
Cleo thought fiercely. She followed Lucia along the city's main concourse. Tiled with sparkling stones, the concourse was usually filled with citizens going about their daily business, with carriages and wagons bringing both guests and wares to the many businesses and the palace itself. Its emptiness was so eerie, Cleo felt a shiver run up her spine.
"Please! Please help us!"
Cleo froze at the mournful sound of cries coming from a deep pit in the ground 10 paces away, at the edge of a grassy garden. Legs stiff, she moved to the side of it and looked down at 30 faces looking up. Her heart wrenched.
"Princess!"
The trapped Iranians reached up toward her.
"Please help us! Save us!"
Cleo staggered back from the side, her breath now coming in gulps as she tried not to allow her fear and desperation to overwhelm her.
"Lucia,"
Cleo barely managed to speak.
"You have to help them." "I can't."
A sob rose in Cleo's throat, but she refused to let it out. Lucia might be helping Kayan in order to save her daughter, but at what cost? Thousands of people called this city their home. Countless others would be visiting for the day. Kayan would kill them all.
You can, Cleo insisted.
Trust me. They're safer in there than anywhere else. Lucia's expression was grim.
Kayan arrived in the city in a foul mood. He burned 50 citizens in a single burst of his fire before Olivia created pits like this.
Cleo stifled a gasp. Kayan's foul mood was surely because she'd run away from the temple. And now 50 citizens were dead. She tried to find her voice in the face of this realization.
Olivia is trying to help.
I wouldn't say that, Lucia exhaled shakily.
I think she's simply trying to keep Kayan from becoming distracted from the task at hand. Which is?
Kayan wants me to perform the ritual again, Lucia told her.
The ritual?
Cleo repeated.
No, Lucia, no. You have to listen to me. You can't do this.
I have no choice.
You do have a choice. I can help you defeat him.
Lucia laughed.
You don't know Kayan like I do, Cleo. He can be charming when he wants to be. Curious about mortals and their amusing behavior. But he's not a man who can be reasoned with. He is fire, and it's in his very nature to burn. The others are the same.
You've seen them. Lucia nodded.
They're all at the palace waiting for you. I thought I might be able to reason with Olivia. That she might have some kind of maternal instinct and want to protect Lyssa. She is the Earth Kindred. That magic is what makes healing and growth possible. But she's not like that. She's just like Kayan. She wants to use her magic for evil, and she will destroy everything on a whim. Mortals aren't important to them, not individually. We're like insects, annoying pests that are easily swatted away.
Cleo waited for the Water Kindred to add something, but it stayed silent. Perhaps that meant it agreed with everything Lucia said. Cleo wasn't surprised by any of this. Last night, Kayan had pretended to be kind, as he'd offered to help her through this, as both Olivia and the Water Kindred had called it, transition. But Kayan gave her no choice in the outcome. He would win, she would lose.
Is Lyssa here?
Cleo asked.
Have you seen her?
Lucia's expression grew pained, her sky-blue eyes filled with anguish.
She's here. I'm sure of it. But I haven't seen her yet. If you haven't seen her, how can you be so sure she's here?
Lucia turned a glare on her, one so sharp that Cleo nearly flinched away from it.
Where else would she be? Kayan has her. He's using her to keep me in line, and it's working very well.
Cleo's stomach sank. Lucia sounded so despondent, so hopeless. Yet she'd also never sounded more dangerous. Part of Cleo had begun to doubt that Kayan had taken Lyssa. She would have seen some sign of the baby last night at the temple. Surely Nick would have known about her. But if Kayan didn't have her, who would? It didn't make any sense.
When did you come back?
Cleo asked more tentatively now.
Kayan summoned me earlier today.
She frowned.
What do you mean he summoned you?
Lucia paused as they passed the city gardens. A portion of the hedges were shaped into a maze that children could run through, searching for a way out the other side. Cleo knew it reminded Lucia of the ice maze back at the Lemurian Palace. She saw a very familiar emotion cross the sorceress's blue eyes. Wistfulness. It was the same ache Cleo felt for a simpler, happier time.
I was with Jonas and... I felt it here.
Lucia pressed her hands to her temples.
My magic. It's fully connected to theirs. In an instant I knew where he was, and I knew he wanted me to come to him. I didn't hesitate.
Where is Jonas now? Cleo asked.
I don't know.
There was something in the way she said it.
"Did you hurt him?" Cleo demanded.
Lucia turned a bleak look on her.
"He's strong. He'll survive."
For a moment, Cleo couldn't speak.
"You could fix this, all of this. You are a sorceress. You could imprison them. I would be risking my baby's life if I even tried."
Cleo grabbed her arm, finally getting angry.
"Lucia, don't you get it? Your baby's life is already in danger. But the whole world will be in danger if you do what Kyan says. You know this already, yet you're still siding with a monster. Perhaps you've just been looking for an excuse all this time to join her side. Is that it?"
Outrage flashed in Lucia's gaze.
"How can you say that? You are your father's daughter. You only want power, and if that power is given to you by an evil god, you'll gladly take it."
"Wrong," Lucia growled.
"You've always been wrong about me. So quick to judge from your perfect golden tower and your perfect golden life."
Cold anger flowed through Cleo then, and ice formed at her feet, expanding out to coat an abandoned carriage on the side of the road. Lucia looked at it with a frown.
"You can control the water magic within you."
Cleo fisted her hands at her sides.
"If I could, you would be a block of ice right now."
But then a wave of water hit Cleo from out of nowhere, an invisible wave that covered her mouth and nose. She couldn't breathe. It took her under, drowning her. No, it couldn't happen again. She wouldn't survive it this time.
"Yes," the water kindred whispered. "Let me take over now. Don't resist. Everything will be much better the moment you stop struggling."
It was too hard to keep fighting when the inevitable loomed in front of her. The kindred would win. Cleo would lose. And she had to admit the truth of it. It would be so easy to just stop struggling. The sensation of Lucia grabbing hold of her hand and pushing something onto her finger drew her out of the invisible waters. She gasped for air.
"What? What are you doing to me?"
"Cleo, you're all right," Lucia told her firmly. "You're alive, you're all right. Just breathe." She forced herself to take one breath, and then another. Finally, the drowning sensation ebbed away. Lucia gripped her upper arms.
"You have to fight this." "I thought you didn't want me to. I never said that. Hopefully this will give you just a bit more strength like it did for me in the beginning. After all, it rightfully belongs to you. You've just let me borrow it, really."
Cleo frowned, not understanding. And then she looked down at her hand. Lucia had given her back the amethyst ring.
"What?"
she began. Lucia raised her hand to silence her.
"Tell no one. The longer you keep fighting, the longer I'll be able to make him believe the ritual needs to wait. Now follow me. If we take any longer, he'll send his personal servant back out to find us."
Cleo reeled from having her ring back. The ring that helped Lucia control her magic.
"Who? Enzo? I know you like him. I like him too. But he's been marked by fire. He has no choice but to obey Kyan. That's why I sent him away."
Cleo realized then that Lucia was fighting just as hard as she was, just in a different way. They weren't enemies, not anymore. Perhaps they never were. They were allies, but they were both at an extreme disadvantage.
"Lucia,"
Cleo said, her voice hushed.
"I know how to stop them."
"Do you now?"
An edge of wry humor entered Lucia's voice.
"Did you find this nugget of information in a book?"
"No. This nugget of information came from Nick himself last night."
Lucia's brow furrowed.
"Impossible."
Cleo shook her head.
"Kyan isn't as in control as he might present himself to be. He's vulnerable right now, and Nick's found a way to break through at times."
Lucia's gaze moved around them as they walked past a yard they'd once been seated at together. Cleo remembered very vividly the day they'd shared, part of which had been spent watching a group of attractive young men practice their swordplay. The yard was empty today, more like a graveyard than a place that had contained so much life.
"What did he tell you?"
Lucia asked, her voice low. Cleo was still hesitant to tell her, but she knew they were each other's best chance.
"The orbs, the crystal orbs, they're the kindred's anchors to this plane of existence. If they're destroyed, the kindred won't be able to walk this world any longer."
"Anchors," Lucia repeated under her breath, frowning deeply.
"Anchors to this world, yes. And they need to be destroyed. Yes, but that's the problem. Magnus tried to destroy the aquamarine orb, but it didn't work, no matter how hard he hit it with a rock."
Lucia shook her head.
"Of course not. They're not crystal, not really. The magic."
She pulled her cloak tighter around her, as if she'd just become chilled.
"This makes sense, all of it. I've been trying to understand where the kindred were all this time, this last 1,000 years. The Watchers and countless mortals have searched Mitica from north to south, looking for this treasure."
Cleo's gaze scanned the concourse, cringing as she noticed another deep prisoner pit to the north.
"But it wasn't until your magic came into being that they could be awakened."
"Yes."
"Awakened," Lucia nodded. "Because that's exactly what happened. They were asleep, as in, not conscious. They had no consciousness like they do now. They joined, the kindred and the crystals. To destroy the crystal is simply to destroy its physical form. The magic would still exist in the air, in the earth beneath our feet, in the water of the sea, and in the fire in the hearth. All would be as it should be, how it should have been from the very beginning."
Cleo's head swam with all this information.
"I'm glad to see you seem to be understanding all of this far better than I could ever hope to."
Lucia smiled nervously.
"I understand it, but far less than I'd like to. So that's what we need to do,"
Cleo said with a nod.
"Figure out a way to destroy the crystal orbs."
Lucia didn't reply. Her gaze grew distant again as she paused just steps away from the palace entrance. Cleo eyed it uneasily, not wanting to enter. Lucia appeared just as hesitant.
"I can try to figure it out," Lucia said.
"But there's one large problem I can see."
"What?"
A shadow crossed her expression.
"You. And Nick, and Olivia, and Taryn. Your bodies. They're mortal and fragile, flesh and blood. You are the current vessels for the kindred, and I have no way of knowing if you'll survive the impact this much magic would have upon you. I saw what happened to Kyan the last time he came face to face with counter-magic. It destroyed his shell. And that shell had been immortal."
Cleo blinked. But of course Lucia was right. There was no easy way for this to end. To destroy the crystals, to send the kindred into a form of being that had no conscious hold upon this world, it would kill them all. But it would save her city. And it would save her world.
"I can't speak for the others, but I can speak for myself," Cleo said firmly. "Do whatever you have to do, Lucia. I'm not afraid to die today."
Lucia nodded once.
"I'll try."
The two continued through the palace. Similar to the vines outside, the walls of the corridors were coated in moss. Flowers grew from cracks in the marble. Small fires burned, not in lanterns and torches set into the wall like usual, but in shallow pits carved into the floor. They passed a room, the door wide open, where a dozen guards clutched their throats, gasping for air.
"Taryn," Lucia said. "He too enjoys using his magic wherever possible."
Cleo's stomach lurched.
"The real Taryn would be mortified. I have no doubt."
Finally, they reached the throne room. Cleo couldn't believe it had only been a day since she'd been here last. It looked completely different. The high ceilings were covered in a canopy of vines and moss. The marble floor was now that of a forest floor. Dirt and rocks and small plants poked through the surface.